I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line, our topic today. Now is the time for beefing up your sales force. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and your trusted advisors. Before I introduce our guest, I want to share with you a brief excerpt from a book I'm sure most of you have read by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. It's on page 16, and it starts out, "A long while ago, a great warrior faced a situation which made it necessary for him to make a decision which ensured his success on the battlefield. He was about to send his armies against a powerful foe whose men outnumbered his own. He loaded his soldiers into boats, sailed to the enemy's country, unloaded soldiers and equipment, then gave the order to burn the ships so that he carried them. Addressing his men before the first battle, he said, 'You see the boats going up in smoke? That means that we cannot leave these shores alone unless we win. We will not be alive unless we win. We now have no choice. We win or we perish.' They won. Every person who wins in any undertaking must be willing to burn his ships and cut all sources of retreat. Only by doing so can one be sure of maintaining that state of mind known as a burning desire to win, which is essential to success." This is what Joe Vaughn is going to be doing for us today. I'm so pleased to have Joe with us. He's a longtime friend and business colleague. Joe has over 36 years of business experience and has been president and CEO of Cardkey Systems, as well as having a vast recruiting and sales training background both domestically and globally. Around 10 years ago, Joe founded and is a CEO of Security Search and Consulting and Advanced Search Partners. I feel privileged to have Joe with us today to share his wisdom, insight, sageness with us today, and to share ideas for dealing with today's business issues. At the end of our program, you'll also have the opportunity to register for our next program, which will begin at the end of our session today. Joe, welcome.
Thank you, Dana, and hello, everyone. I'm really pleased to be here. I wasn't aware you were going to read that clip from Think and Grow Rich. It reminds me when you talked about a passion for excellence, a passion to win. I had an opportunity years ago to go to Australia and conduct a sales training and success program down there. And going down there to Australia, the company, the director of the company asked me, when I get down there, could I speak to them about the power of their organization? And when he said the word power, he kind of put me aside there for a second. I didn't really understand. So first thing I did is I looked up power in the dictionary. And if you look up power in the dictionary, it says that power is the ability to act or perform effectively. And, you know, you kind of start thinking about what are those reasons that people act or perform effectively. And the Fortune 100 companies actually did a survey. And they looked at all their top performing sales executives and salespeople, and they came back with two common denominators. They said the people that perform effectively have a burning desire to succeed. And they said the other characteristic, the second one, was they have a burning desire not to fail. So whether you're here to, you know, achieve at a high level or to make sure that you don't fail, that's kind of the difference that separates people that have a power and demonstrate it on a regular basis or people that struggle to find their power. And today, you know, kind of in your conversation, Dana, you were asking, what am I seeing out there? And very simply, you're seeing companies that are performing effectively. You're seeing companies that are performing effectively, demonstrating their power, and you see companies that are struggling to find their power, and what are the differences. And you asked me to speak today about building up your sales force, beefing up the sales force. And most people think that beefing up your sales force is just hiring a bunch of salespeople and throwing money at them in terms of base salaries and expenses, and all of a sudden thinking your revenue and gross margin lines are going to change. It's really kind of like building your dream home on a bed of quicksand. Unless the foundation is there, that dream home will never materialize. So when we talk about that today, we're really going to talk about preparing to beef up your sales force by really laying a strong foundation. And I'm going to take you through this information. And there's a little delay on the slides, folks, so you have to bear with me. I'm going to give you some research today. I'm going to give you some research, and the research is going to come from a cross-section of all industries as to their clients and to their employees. So we're going to talk today about, hopefully, what your employees and your clients are not saying. Hopefully, those of you that are on this call today are performing effectively, have great relationships with your clients, have great relationships with your employees, and none of this information is going to affect you. But one of the things that you should know, and hang on, I just want to deal with this. Dana, you'll have to come down for us 1 second. This line went out. Can you come down, Dana, for 1 second? I'm going to put you on hold here for a second. See, it's not advancing. Okay. The thing that we're going to talk about is that companies are struggling with some common issues. And the first thing we're going to talk about is our team and how and what our employees are doing. I'm having some problems of advancing the slides, so that's what's going on right now. So, okay, here we go. I've got it fixed, and we're going to go right to it. So the research that I've given you will be from your clients and your employees. Hopefully it'll all be positive. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to look at some common characteristics across our employee teams, okay? And what you're going to first see is what all of our employees are seeing across all media. So you take a look at that, YouTube, newspapers, CNN. What are our employees seeing out there on a regular basis? What's happening to their mentality? Unemployment. Double-digit rates, massive home foreclosures, people having trouble getting credit. Your clients are delaying projects. Your revenue and profits are behind plan. And your backlog, in many cases, is worse than ever. That's what a lot of the employees are seeing in a lot of companies that are struggling. They're also obviously seeing that across all of the external issues. They also see their vendors as well as their clients struggling to be successful. If you look at companies that are reported falling earnings, you're seeing that 69% of the companies that are reporting falling earnings are basically saying, hey, it's either sales or it's our pricing. Sales or our pricing. Our sales are down, our sales prices are down because of strong competition, and we're reporting lower earnings. Now, across all industries, you're seeing a drop in earnings in small businesses. 51% of small to mid-sized businesses report lower earnings. So, you know, your employees are sitting out there. They're seeing what's going on out there in the economy. They see what's going on between your vendors, your clients. They see all this information. And what's happening is it's creating across the board with the employee population a general malaise, a total lack of energy. They're worn down. In many cases, they've given up. You know, we talk about fear. Fear generates a paralysis. Fear basically forces us to not make decisions. We're afraid to make decisions. It paralyzes our ability to take action. And basically, the employees are sitting there saying, you know, I'm down. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't really want to make decisions at this point. I'm not sure I'm committed. Well, what's happened now is you've got to ask yourself, your employee population, these issues that are going on, how has that affected them? What percentage of people in your organization do you think are dissatisfied? If you have 50 people, 100, 500 people, what percentage of knowing that your people are upset would bother you? Would it be 10%? Would it be 20%? Would it be 30%? At what point would you really get upset and start taking action? Would it help for you to know that 55% of employees are dissatisfied with their positions? It's the highest level of dissatisfaction in 22 years, and it's across all ages and all income brackets in your organization. It used to be that the younger people would come in, want it sooner rather than later, more of it than less of it, and become dissatisfied. Now, it's across all positions, all ages, all income brackets. Now, it's funny because employers are really not taking the pulse of this level of dissatisfaction. They asked employers, how many of your people, what percentage of your people do you think have actually gone out and looked for other positions? So if you were thinking about that right now, what level of that would bother you? Would it be 10, 20, 25%? Well, the information that we gathered is basically that the employers thought 37% of their people really were out there looking for other jobs, and they could maybe live with that, when in reality, it's double that. 65% of employees admit that they've looked for new jobs. So as you continue on with this, you realize that this level of dissatisfaction has virtually changed the workplace into almost an adult daycare center. You'll see, now you notice that first word, it says whining. It doesn't say winning, Dana. It doesn't say winning, okay? It says the whining and gossip is virtually preventing employees from enjoying and having fun at doing their work and executing their duties. So not only are we having an adult daycare center on our hands, but it's reached the point where people that we have counted on for years, critical employees, have given up. They've lost their energy. They've lost that passion to succeed. They've lost that passion to fail. Not to fail, I should say. They've just reached a point now where they're just not sure what to do. And the problem with that is when you have critical employees and a large percentage of your employees unhappy, dissatisfied, it's touching the revenue line, it's touching the gross margin line, it's touching the bottom line, and it's touching the client. And that's a real problem in really developing a foundation to grow the company. So the first thing you say is, well, we know that one thing is for sure, and one thing for sure is that the economy will reach its trough, and it will start to climb out. And a lot of employers are sitting there saying, well, you know, when the economy gets better, those levels of dissatisfaction will change. Well, probably what you need to know is that the majority, 60%, of dissatisfied workers say it has nothing to do with the economy. See, that's the problem. And this is an area where you as leaders out there can really make a difference. See, the motivators here, or I should say the demotivators, people feel that they're underpaid. You know, when you look at the research, it's probably more of an irritant than it is a major reason. Employees taking on more costs, and they're taking on more costs in the form of health care. Many employers have had to shift the burden, as you know, onto the employee. So that has been an area of irritant as well. And then people obviously want more vacation policies. But the two items in red are the areas that you can make a change in. An absence of training. That is one of the key issues of dissatisfaction of why employees leave. They feel that the organization is not making an investment in them, and is a major area of dissatisfaction. And also, they have a concern about their leadership. And what's interesting about that is they feel that the leadership is basically navigating in uncharted waters in this economy. And they really don't know if they should basically have full confidence in their leadership. So, and this is an area here where you probably have some actions, and we're going to talk about those actions here in a minute, on what we can do to stop some of this bleeding that's happening from this turnover. You know, the goal here is not to replace everybody. The goal is to get a team that's functional, that has a passion to win, and is going to go out and grow the company. Because here's what can happen when you can get everybody on the same page, just like a sports team. When you get everybody on the same page, everybody's running the same play, everybody's enthusiastic about it, good things are going to happen. So when you've got everybody on the same page, look at what the results can be. Customer satisfaction up 38%. Productivity, profits, okay? Those are compelling statistics on why we need to get everybody on the same page. So obviously we have to ask ourselves, what do we have to do to go from an organization that's struggling to an organization that's generating and demonstrating their power? What can we do to change this? Well, obviously one of the first things we've got to do is we've got to replace those individuals, or change those attitudes in the organization that are basically sucking everyone's energy, okay? We've got to have everybody on the same page. And the only person I'm going to turn to is, you remember Maverick and Top Gun? And this is something that I enjoy, is I always think about Maverick and Top Gun. At the end of the movie, you remember at the end of the movie, he'd lost his co-pilot, he'd lost his girlfriend. They were his team was up in the air under attack, and they sent Maverick up there to help out, and they needed leadership. They needed his direction. They needed his guidance. They needed his actions. And basically, he went up there, and he wasn't sure what to do. Kind of stayed out on the periphery, and, you know, his team saying, Maverick, we need you. We need you to engage, Maverick. And the team down there on the aircraft carrier saying, Maverick, engage, engage. I kind of get goosebumps on me right now even thinking about it. But anyway, you know, we all know at the end of the day that Maverick decided to get involved, take action, and engage. And those are the actions that you as leaders out in those areas have to get involved in. What are the things that we have to do to reestablish that trust, get it to have the employees have fun again, show them how to win? We've got to get engaged. We've got to communicate with our people across all areas of the organization, whether it's team meetings, weekly meetings. We can have action planning meetings. We can do all kind of positive things, but it simply has to be frequent, and it has to be sincere. We've got to build trust with these folks again. We've got to talk to them. We can't run from them. You know, one of the things that's happened here with this economy and the dissatisfaction is it actually has touched our leadership. You know, leadership is not in any way tarnished from this general malaise, this paralysis, this lack of commitment. It gets everyone down. You know, sometimes it's easier not to engage. Sometimes it's easier to avoid conversations with employees rather than telling them everything. And all they want to do is they want to know what's going on. They want to stay challenged. They want to make it fun again. They want you to help them win. In fact, you know, the research talks about that helping employees win is unfortunately a lost art. They want to go overboard on rewards and recognition, but they want to see, and you remember that one critical success factor that dissatisfies people is a lack of training. They want you to invest in their training. They want you to invest in their personal growth and development. Now, you got to remember that when you're doing these things, and is there anything on here? If you look at this, this is all fundamentals of leadership. When we bought into a leadership program, this is what we bought into. Communicating with our people, building trust, being open and honest, making it fun, making it challenging, developing in the... We bought into that when we bought into a leadership role. So at the end of the day, if we can get everybody on the same page and contributing to everybody's common success here with one mutual goal, the puzzle comes together. The puzzle comes together, and basically we're back to where we want to be with level of satisfaction to the client, productivity, and profits. Now, can you really imagine going out and adding a bunch of salespeople when 55% of your people are dissatisfied? So you bring this great group of new people into an organization that has, well, I guess we could call it, that's somewhat unhealthy, and all of a sudden negatives start to rub off on the new people. So you can see why it's so important to really focus on cleaning up the foundation here of what's going on. Now, what's important that you should understand here is that in the research it says that every mishire, every time you make a bad hire or you lose someone, it's a $500,000 hit to your bottom line, because most people only stay 18 months. So the goal here is, if you can save these people through all of those actions we discuss, if you can keep those people excited and in the organization, that's money that you're saving right to the bottom line. And that's obviously critical. Now, we talked about employees and some actions now and understanding where they stand and what actions we have to take to start making improvements. I also now want to talk to you about what your end users are saying, and I want to talk to you about the cardinal rule of marketing. And I think all of you know that the cardinal rule of marketing is to protect your core client base, and it's also to basically provide more products and services and various solutions to your core clients. Here it is. Cardinal rule of marketing: protect your core client base at all costs. Provide more products and services to your core client base. Because we all understand that selling to our core client base, I don't want to say it's easier. I want to say it should be more profitable, because we're working with them from a standpoint of add-ons, upgrades, whether it's service, we have service contracts or not. We're also maybe focusing on the sister companies and subsidiaries of our clients, because when we can stay within that niche and work from referrals, we're going to be more successful than always going out to chase new business. So one of the things that we're also reminded on in this economy is that clients are having a difficult time paying their bills. But when you're working with your core clients, the majority of your core clients are going to pay their bills on time. So that's very, very helpful from a cash flow standpoint. We also know that referrals from an existing client are more profitable. We're not only going to get referrals from them, but we're going to get testimonials from them. So obviously we want to live in the core client base. Now, what's happening is we're spending the salespeople, the companies out there that are struggling for success are really a kind of chasing business. And it's not uncommon to see maybe 20-plus competitors on a new project, depending on what industry you're in. So why do we want to go out and chase that new business and sacrifice our core client relationship? So now you go to your end user and you say, well, what is the end user saying about us? How does the end user feel? Do they get up in the morning and think about if they're going to need us or our products? They think about us. Well, let me take you, before I answer that question for you, let me take you to a concept that I trained on years ago called fair share, mind share. And I'm sure a lot of you know something about it or a lot about it, but when you start a business, in the beginning of a business, the attitude is always, you know, there's enough business out there for everyone. I just want to get my fair share on the business. Let's say you're a manufacturer selling to a reseller, and you're selling widgets, and maybe they're buying widgets from two other companies. Well, if you can get a third of their business, you're happy. You're getting fair share of the business, and you're just happy to get it. But as the business grows, and as your business matures, then fair share is not good enough anymore. So all of a sudden, as the business grows and as you really become more successful, you really want to be the primary player for the entire solution to that client. So now them buying widgets from three companies is no longer good enough. You want them to buy all the widgets from you. And there's things that you do. There's actions and behaviors that we take on in order to build fair share, mind share. Establishing trust, following up, doing what you promise you're going to do, building personal and professional relationships better than the other folks. So there's a laundry list of actions that you take on over a period of time to build these fair share, mind share relationships with your core clients. So when you go out and talk to the end users and you say, well, what's happening? You know, how do you view, you know, your supplier? The clients are basically saying, we've been abandoned. Forget about fair share, mind share. They don't hear from you at all. In fact, many times, they don't even know who to call when they have a problem in an organization because there's been so many changes. Because there's been so much turnover, they don't even know who to turn to. In fact, not only do they not know who to turn to in your organization, they're getting more calls from your competitors than they are from you. And so you've got to ask yourself, how did this happen? How did this happen? Now, all of you know what that feeling is in your gut when you lose a core client. When you lose a core client, knowing all of the effort that you put in over a period of time, the relationships, the activity, the successes, dealing with adversity, to lose a core client makes you pace the floors at night. I can tell you and raise my hand that I know what it is to lose a core client. And when you lose a core client, you know that feeling is so deep and so hurtful that you'll do everything in your power to make sure that you don't make that mistake again. And not only make that mistake again, but now you got to go try to win it back. And now you've got to invest all that time, energy, and money in trying to win it back. So the bottom line is, what do we do? What do we do? Now, we could call Maverick back in here. And Maverick will show you. He'll show you all that leader, all those leadership skills again, getting engaged, and so on and so forth. But really, it's not that difficult. What we need to understand is, whenever we have issues like this, it's because we've gotten away from the fundamentals. And so we've got to start asking ourselves some questions. Now we already know what we've got to do with the employee base. Okay. Now we've got to look at our existing clients, and we've got to ask ourselves. We got to look ourselves in the mirror here, Dana, and we've got to ask ourselves, why are we chasing new accounts and allowing our competitors to get a foothold in our client base? And here are some of the questions. These are just common sense questions that I know over the years that we have to ask. Is it because the revenue goals are so aggressive that you've got to do that? You've got to basically abandon your core clients for new business? I mean, do we even have revenue goals for our core clients? Do we have the same rep calling on our core clients as we do new business, and are they incentivized more to go after new business than core clients? Because some of those questions, you start looking at those things, you say, geez, you know, these are common sense questions. We shouldn't be really in this situation. Well, there's more to it than that. Now, second list of questions. Do we have a sales strategy in place to focus on our core clients? Do we have a pricing program that's favorable to them so we can get the business exclusively with payment terms Is there a special after-sale care program that we can roll out to our existing clients that would be a compelling value proposition for them to want to just give us all their business? How about a specific rep, which we just talked about? We've got to have a frequency of touches, specific touches. Are we calling on them once a week, once a month, twice a month, five times a quarter? Do we have referral programs set up with them? Those of you that are out there struggling with your business, these are areas here that everyone is struggling with across all market segments, across all industries. Is their clients, in their minds, in the client's eyes, have virtually been abandoned while everybody's out chasing new business. So let's go back. Do we have a compelling value proposition? That your people, and look at the words here, do we have a compelling value proposition that your people can seamlessly express to your clients across all disciplines, whether it's a sales rep, maybe a customer service person, maybe a help desk person, maybe accounts receivable, anyone who touches the client? Do they all understand why it's compelling for that client to work with your organization? History and success of the company, stability of the leadership team and the people that basically deliver on the promises, the breadth of capabilities that you can deliver, how you treat your clients, and obviously an after-sale care program. Take a look at those issues here. Those are value propositions that really have to be put in front of your client on a regular basis. Now, remember when we talked about training? We talked about training is one of the key issues of dissatisfaction. So I want you to look at this. Do we have a training program in place for everyone who touches the client? Look at who touches the client. And I just threw this together based upon how I know who touches the client. We got people maybe in tech support on a help desk gets phone calls. We've got people trying to collect cash. We've got sales in there. We've got customer service, so on and so forth. All of these people touch the client. Have we trained all of these people on how we want to deal with our client base? Ask yourself, in your organization, have you ever sat down and talked to them since they were hired about how you want them to treat clients? Now, you see the one on the bottom? I've got receptionist in red. This is a nightmare. And I will tell you why it's a nightmare. If I were you, most companies go out and bring in a receptionist. They pay them minimum wage, maybe $10 an hour, put them on the phones with absolutely no training, and the receptionist does whatever they did on the last job. However they were told or whatever they were trained, they just assume they're going to do it on this job. So basically, if I were you, I'd probably think about this title, receptionist, and I may want to change that title to manager, director, or vice president of first impressions. Now, if you don't like that title, you may want to change it to manager, director, vice president of lead generation. And if you don't like those two titles, then you may want to say manager, director, vice president of don't screw it up. Because I will tell you, as you can see down here at the bottom, that it takes months of labor, blood, sweat, and tears to land a project, depending on what business you're in. A moment of indifference to lose an opportunity. If you take nothing out of this program today, other than sitting down with your receptionist on how to handle inbound phone calls, how to greet people, how to make them feel warm and comfortable, how to give them a genuine impression that they're there to solve their problem and they're representing a company that is the greatest company on the planet. If you can do that, then that single action will be the benefit of these last 40 or 50 minutes that you'll spend here today. That's how critical that position is. So don't go back there and look at it as a $10 receptionist. You need to really look at that as someone that is presenting that first impression to your organization. So obviously we need to walk away here with some actions on our end users, just like we did with our employees. And basically, you know, really when you run a business, a lot of it is just common sense. You know, we've got to re-engage with our clients. Maybe, depending on the industry, maybe we ought to establish some user groups. Maybe we should establish some frequency of interaction with these people. Maybe we need to get them out for a lunch or a ball game or whatever it is, the things we used to do to build those relationships. Remember, when they call us, we need to call them back by the end of the business day. Many companies have what they call a sundown rule. It says that by the end of the business day, you will return every phone call before you leave for that day. Call it a sundown rule. You return the call the same day that it comes in. You know what? It demonstrates a level of urgency, professionalism, and shows the clients that you care. Return phone calls promptly, and it's critical that we reestablish trust and confidence with those core clients that we lost touch with. Now, obviously, you can see that if we can deal with the employees, eliminate that negative energy, get everybody focused on the same page, start investing in their training and development, interacting with them, doing the same thing with the clients, we are now laying the groundwork to go out and start adding a level of professionalism into the organization. Now, we talked about some negative trends that are basically going right to the bottom line. The lack of training is causing employee turnover. And when you have employee turnover and now you've got to go out and try to replace those people, most hiring managers have never been trained to go out and hire what we call the preferred candidates, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So this lack of training, we've got to talk about right now. And we're going to talk about the fact that the majority of companies have eliminated training and development. Now, I showed you earlier that it's a major source of irritation, aggravation, and why people leave. Yet most companies have eliminated training and development as an unnecessary overhead. Well, believe me, those companies that have done that have definitely validated that training will not show up in the overhead line as training and development expense. You won't see anywhere on the P&L that expense. But where you will see it, and you know where you're going to see it, is you're not going to see it in revenue, and you're going to see the gross margin eroded because you've got people out there that are untrained in whether it's delivering the product or delivering the service or selling and negotiating. You're going to pay for that one way or the other, and you're paying for it in a lack of revenue and a lack of gross margin. Think about if you could pick up 2 points of gross margin in your organization over the year. What would that do to your bottom line? So, obviously, we want to talk about the training. How can we do the training without it costing an arm and a leg? Now I want to go back because I advanced that two by mistake, so we're going to go back one. So what I want to tell you is, and I'll tell you this from experience, you don't need an in-house training organization to train and develop people. What you need is an ad hoc group of internal resources, maybe a group, maybe including yourself and some key people around you, that are really what you consider to be experts, whether it's sales, project management, installation, service, whatever the key issues are. You've got people in your organization that you can turn to along with some outside resources. And if you'll do that, you'll see in a period of a year what we would call dramatic improvements in performance. And let's, since we're talking about beefing up sales, let's look at what a sales rep, the key characteristics, the skill sets that we're looking for every sales rep. Obviously, they got to know the product inside and out. They've got to know the application of the product. They've got to be able to handle questions, so on and so forth. So product knowledge is something that every sales rep has to have and that you could provide them or your vendor can provide them on the product knowledge. But look at all these other skills, probing and listening skills, communication skills, written and verbal. Handle the ability to communicate, handle objections. gain commitment to take the process to the next step, and then be involved in the negotiation of the project. Okay? Now you look at that. Look at that sales rep and ask yourself, how many of my sales reps can I put a check mark next to on each one of those bullets? Probing and listening skills, communication skills, negotiation skills. How many of my people out of my entire sales force truly have that? I'm going to show you something that when I saw this, I have to tell you, it's just very, very disappointing. We've always heard that 20% of the people sell 80% of the business, okay? But look at what these statistics say. 55% of salespeople should be doing something else. 20 to 25 may have what it takes, but they should be selling something else. So based upon everything that you've heard and read, and based upon these numbers, you're basically getting unsatisfactory results the majority of the time. Okay, and that's basically because we've got to do two things. We've got to train better, and we've got to hire right. So when you look at the external resources that are available to you out there, you know, when I had my company, we actually created a chapter of Toastmasters within our organization. And they met every Monday from 12 to 1 during the lunch hour here in California. And I have to tell you, we had people not just from sales. We had salespeople. We had people from accounting, documentation, engineering. We had it from virtually every area of the company. And I can tell you honestly that I saw people transform their abilities to communicate and their ability to develop confidence in front of others. I saw people transform themselves in a matter of 9 to 15 months. Just a wonderful program, very little expense to be involved in it, but something that if you're really focused on training and development, this is a program I'd probably have every one of my people in. You know, there's concepts out there called spin selling, probing, finding the pain for your client, teaching your salespeople, whether it's strategic selling, spin selling, major accounts. These programs all exist, and they exist out there at what I consider to be minimal cost. And obviously, there's negotiation programs. We bring in the product manufacturer to really teach them the products. But this is an area where you have to focus on for the training and development. Again, don't assume that you're going to go out and take your competitor's best sales rep and that's going to solve all your problems. It's probably just going to create as many problems as it's going to solve, because you're going to find that they don't have all of the sales skills, all of the actions and behaviors that you want to see in your organization. Don't buy somebody else's problem. Develop and execute, and I think you're going to see some tremendous improvements. Look, I think a lot of people always look at some of these books that are out, Good to Great, Jack Welch on winning. They say that hiring top people must be the primary task. Well, if we've got our employees dedicated, if there's a passion to win, we're dealing with those. We've got our end users back in line. Now we can actually start talking about building a sales organization and going out and hiring. But one of the things that I want you to look at, you know, they talked earlier about every time you make a bad hire, the research and the statistics say it's a $500,000 hit to the bottom line. Well, I want you to look at this. I think all of you know the direct cost of making a hire. You've got recruiting fees, you've got their salary and compensation, you've got their benefits. You know, hopefully you're not going to get involved in any severance or legal costs, but the direct costs of a hire are pretty common sense. I think we all know them. What I want you to see here are what we call the indirect costs of a bad hire, and I want you to look at the middle and bottom section. The cost of poor performance, poor execution, a failed product launch, missed earning targets, losing a major project maybe to your competitors, lawsuits maybe from a client, something gone wrong. I also want you to look at this bottom section called cost of poor subordinate department morale. It's called what we call trickle-down costs. These are those 55% of your employees that are upset, that are dissatisfied, that maybe don't trust their leadership, you're not investing in their training and development, that's where that cost comes in. And I want to show you a case study that was done on a product manager that I think you'll find very interesting. This is a product manager. It was one of 52 cases studied. This project manager was paid a base compensation of $102,000 and was basically in the job for a year and a half. Now, you'll see up there the fees and so forth that it cost in hiring this person. Could have been fees, travel expenses, so on and so forth. The compensation that was been paid. Now, look at the cost of mistakes, failures, wasted business opportunities, and the cost of disruption. Those are those trickle-down costs and the fact that maybe the product launch didn't get out on time, so you didn't get the revenue and gross margin that you were projecting. But look at the average cost here. That cost, and they gave them a value. They actually gave them a positive value contribution of $360,000. You can see at the bottom. The cost here was $1.5 million to an employee that cost $102,000 base salary. In this case here, it was 14.6 times the base salary. When you look at it like this, you'll find that the majority of bad hires, the average cost is somewhere between 8 and 14 times the base salary. So now you can go back maybe over the last 24 months with your HR folks. You can pull up those individuals that left maybe after 18 months, 24 months, and ask yourself, you know, what was the true cost? What did we lose? You know, we had one person had a quota of $1.8 million. They did $500,000. The P&L budget had a quota of $1.8 million at a gross margin of 40%. They actually did $500,000 at a gross margin of 22%. So you can really start to look and see what those costs were. And that's basic. These costs are because most hiring managers really have not created a standard in their organization. And the standard has to be, and I'm going to show you some companies that use this standard on a regular basis, but the standard has to be an A player. An A player is what we call the best potential candidate for that position that meets the majority of the requirements. Now, most companies, they're populated with what we call C and D players. That can't happen. It's got to be A players must be the standard, and if you're going to deviate from that standard, then it has to be a B player. A B player that can be groomed through training and development to be an A player. And here's an example of a list of companies that traditionally always go after the best candidates. These companies have a way of always going after the best candidates. And I'm going to show you here where they find them. They just don't go out there and find them, you know, obviously hanging off of low-hanging fruit here. They're going to find them from their employees, from their vendors that call on them, subcontractors if they work with subcontractors. Their end users will actually tell you who they look up to and admire in terms of who works with them. You can pick them up with associations, various associations that you may belong to, and also staffing companies. Now, I'm going to leave that up there for a minute because I want you to see that is really the critical sources. And obviously, you know, maybe there's a rep firm that you could turn to that could give you a name to someone. But I'm going to show you in a minute the candidate pool and how all this comes together. But before I do that, I really want to show you why it's so critical to hire A players and how A players are looked at by everyone in an organization. I just want you to take and look at that for a minute. The 12 advantages of having A players at all levels in your organization. They contribute more. They work smarter. They earn more trust. They're resourceful. They take initiative. They articulate their vision more passionately. They demonstrate greater teamwork. What they do here is those 12 advantages, when you put them all together, that's what creates what we call competitive advantage in an organization. Those are the things that you have to have. And I know that every one of you are probably thinking right now, you know, I have an A player. I have an A player in my organization that does that, contributes more, innovates more, implements change effectively, delivers higher quality of work, finds a way to get the job done, and I have that person. Wouldn't you love to be able to have that person at all levels? And that's why we want to create that standard. Now, look at what they accomplish. When you have A players, look at what a manufacturing operation can do if they have an A player running that operation. If I'm a shareholder in a manufacturing operation, I want to know that I've got somebody in there that's absolutely an A player, because look at the return on profit. Look at that. That is compelling. Look at the top 3% of salespeople produce 250% more than the average. There is just no way that you can get away from wanting to hire A players. So obviously we understand what they can accomplish. We understand why, obviously, where we can find them. I want to show you the candidate pool. See, this is how the candidate pool is structured. And that middle section where it says preferred candidates, that's the pool where we're looking for A players. And I'm going to just very quickly, I'm going to take you through those, through that pyramid, and I'm going to break it apart for you so you can understand what it all means. The non-candidate pool. Why would we want to talk about a non-candidate pool? Well, I can tell you this. It's not likely you're going to hire anyone from the non-candidate pool. Those basically are folks that own their own businesses. They have major equity stakes. Maybe they're part of the family or they're nearing retirement. The reason I even bring it up to you is because they're a great source of referrals for quality people. They don't have any axes to grind. They're basically, if they know a quality player and you ask, they're going to tell you about that quality player. So it's a great source of referrals. Probably not going to hire anyone. This is the section where we want to hire our people. Let me show you some common characteristics. What you're going to find on these preferred candidates is these people are not on Craigslist or Monster. They're not on internet sites. They're not looking. They are so busy being successful and challenged at what they're doing that they don't have time to answer ads, send out resumes, or do any of those things. They have a track record of accomplishments. They're respected and admired by their peers and their competitors, and they're stable and dependable at what they do. Those are the people that you're going to get from the sources that I just showed you, your subcontractors, employees and users, associations, staffing companies, and so forth. Now, the problem that we have, and all industries have this, is they're always sourcing from what we call the aggressive candidate pool. Now, before I get to the aggressive candidate pool, I want to just make sure you understand why a preferred candidate will make a change. They will not make a change for money. I want to say that again. A preferred candidate will not make a change strictly for financial reasons. They must be wooed and courted. They're looking for the challenge. They're looking for a desire to make a difference. They're looking at the quality of the team they're going to play on. They want to be able to create something special in the form of a legacy, and they want a charged, an energy-charged environment. And the financial package obviously has to be there. But if you take off those first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 items and just put financial package, you'll never hire a preferred candidate. You'll never keep them. You have to have, and those items up there, that's called a compelling value proposition. You need one for your clients, and you need one for preferred candidates. These people will not come into your waiting room. They will not sit 2 hours waiting for you to interview them. They won't kiss your ring. They won't fill out an application on the first interview. These are people that you will woo and court over a period of time to develop relationships with them, no different than you would with a million-dollar client. That's how you recruit a preferred candidate, once you can identify them and find them. Okay? Now, understand, that leads us right into the problem of the other candidate pool, because unless you've actively been searching, and actively been talking to preferred candidates, if you have an opening tomorrow and you need to fill that opening tomorrow, you're right back to this aggressive candidate pool. These are the folks that are on the Internet. They're restless and dissatisfied. They're sending resumes to websites. They're sending websites out, sending resumes out constantly. They'll continue to look even after they found a job. Even after they've been put into a position, they will continue to look and continue to send out resumes. Their average stay in an organization is 15 to 18 months. Average stay. That's why when you look at their resume, they don't have a track record of accomplishments, because who do you know that can create a track record of accomplishments in 15 to 18 months? And the interviews are always what we call defensive. The hiring manager is trying to peel back the onion to figure out if this person has a track record, if they're dependable. The candidate is trying to basically defend the number of job changes and why nothing's ever worked out. And at the end of the day, what we have here is we're going to fill a hole, we're going to make a bad hire because we have a timing issue on our hands, and we're going to fill that hole probably the majority of the time with a bad hire. Now, look at the reason why these people change positions. And I hate to put it to you like this, but for the reason that that candidate pool changes is about money, money, and more money. And that's why they're always looking. And it's tragic. But unfortunately, our hiring managers are not trained to go after preferred candidates. It's unfortunate, but it's the reality. So at the end of the day, here's where we are. If we're going to build that dream house on the right foundation and not have it be quicksand, we've got to commit to a sustained training and development program for our people. We've got to create a standard no less than B players for our staff. We've got to teach our hiring managers as well as our HR how to deal with that preferred candidate pool. We know that we have got to get re-engaged with our, we've got to re-engage with our core clients to establish trust and further business. And we've really got to get to that new standard. And Dana, I have to tell you honestly that, you know, you're not, if we look at those things, and they're common sense things, getting back involved with the employees and the end users and creating a standard for as we move forward, what can happen is it's not going to happen over the next 30, 60, 90 days, but if we start now, then you really can make dramatic improvements over the course of the next few months. And that's why you've got to position yourself now. You're not going to make a change this year. It's February. By the time you go out and start taking these actions, dealing with clients, dealing with employees, creating a standard, teaching your hiring managers how to go after preferred candidates, those changes that you're making, the results will not be seen until next year. But the thing is we've got to start doing it now. And those of you out there that are willing to start doing that now, I think you're going to reinvent your organization. You're going to see profits and sales that you haven't seen since probably 2007, 2006. So I wish all of you good luck. Dana, I've kind of enjoyed presenting this information. Do you have any questions? Dana. Dana, I think you're offline here.
There we go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Hear me now. Hear me now?
We hear you, Dana.
Okay, great. Joe, this has been phenomenal. Now, you have a web program coming up in a couple of weeks, and it's only a couple $100 that goes into more detail than what you covered today.
Well, it's the program is it's a 50-minute program in March, and it's basically for hiring managers, and it's $99. It's not $200. It's $99.
Okay.
And it's really to take hiring managers that have always been good at sales or project management or whatever their discipline is, and we have to teach them how to quit screwing up hiring the best people. And there's a lot of prejudices involved in the hiring process that they've got to work their way out of. They've got to learn how to interview. They've got to learn how to score a candidate. There's a lot of information that goes into it, and anyone obviously that is interested in that should contact you, and we'll see if we can't plug them into the program.
Okay, that's phenomenal. You'll see on your screen in just a second, you can register for the next Keeping on Track program coming up on March the 9th. Please sign up today, reserve your space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Joe and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Joe to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together or discuss any of the ideas that were shared today, you'll see Joe's contact information on your screen. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, in San Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insights to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Joe, once again, I want to thank you, and everyone have a wonderful and powerful day. Thank you again.
Bye, everyone.